I fully planned on tackling two chapters in 1 Kings tonight, chapters 7 and 8. And for those of you who read ahead to stay ahead, you know that these are very long chapters. And so I was really by faith wanting to complete both of them and try to have you guys out of here by about 11 p.m. So, no, actually, very interesting chapters. At first read, it would seem that they're just mundane detail concerning the building of the temple. But there's so much just in those two chapters, and I hope that we could get to that tonight. And we might still, possibly, but I'm not going to make any promises. And the reason is that about 1 o'clock this afternoon, I realized that I would be somewhat remiss if I didn't take a little bit of time at least and address some of the things that happened just today, but even some of the things that have happened in the last few days, just in the last week. You know, I was inquiring of the Lord about everything today and sort of wondering and inquiring as to, is it just me, Lord? Is it because I'm, always watching and I always try to keep my finger on the pulse of what's going on, and maybe it's because I'm, proverbially, I'm too close to the tree to see the forest, so maybe that lends itself to a hypersensitivity when it comes to events of prophetic significance. And what the Lord ministered to me was that it's not you, which that always is encouraging to know that you're not alone. It is not me, and I'll tell you, it seems like that things are happening now by the hour. It's also very interesting. Last week, Ray, I got a chance to listen to your teaching on Thursday night, filling in for me, and was really blessed. And I really appreciate you addressing the elephant in the room again, concerning September. The reason I had Ray fill in for me last week was because I had been summoned for jury duty. And I was actually summoned in August, but they deferred it because I was speaking at the conference, and so I could not serve on jury duty. So then the deferment got put till this last week, and I know this was the Lord because I went in, and I don't know if you've ever, went through that whole process of jury selection. What an experience. I had never experienced that before. And I was sort of hoping that it was about a Muslim student who brought a clock to school, and that would, for sure, I would be excused. Well, it wasn't that, but it was actually pretty close. And again, I think the Lord knew, because this was going to be an unusually long trial. It was a civil, not a criminal case, and it would last, they think, and it's still going on right now, about 2.5 to 3 weeks. And that's really unusual, for a trial, especially a civic, case. But typically they're only a few days, maybe a week. But to have a 3 week, even the judge stated that typically the trials that, as judge she's presided over, the longest she ever had was maybe 3 months, but all the others were just a matter of days. Well, I had really been praying about this whole thing, and I kept lamenting. That's a pastor's way of saying complaining to the Lord about, having to serve on the jury, because so much is happening, and I knew that Fred Hulk was gonna, go home any day, and so I just prayed, and it was an all-day process, and I didn't know if I was going to get selected, so I thought, well, I'll just have Ray do Thursday night anyway, and then if I'm not selected, then I can try to catch my breath and decompress, which I did, because I wasn't selected. And the reason I wasn't selected was because, again, God knew that I couldn't still be serving on this jury even now. But it happened to be a case against a medical insurance company for denying a payment on a procedure. And so when I got up, I just told them that I could not be impartial because of my experience with my daughter's death and the battles that we had with the insurance company. So the judge then turned to the attorneys, both the defendant and the plaintiff, and said, I'm inclined to defer this juror. And so who knows? I might get called again. I hope not. Please pray that I don't. It's not that I don't want to serve on a jury. I think it would be a great experience, and it is my duty, and I even see it as a privilege, candidly. But I was asking the Lord about this whole process and just the amount of time. It took an entire day, and they finally called me like about 4 p.m. I'm like, Lord, why couldn't they have just called me at 9 a.m.? You know, anyway, so am I complaining? Yes, I am. Well, anyway. But I think that, you know, the enemy has really been trying to derail me and trying to take me out of commission. You have no idea. I'm not going to even get into that. It's been really, really intense. Today was one of those days that, as a teacher of Bible prophecy, you just kind of scratch your head and cry out, Lord, come quickly. I know that you have heard about this breaking news today. There was this mass shooting. A man killed what some are reporting to be as many as 10 people. There's conflicting reports. One report was that there were as many as 13 people that were killed. These were students at a Oregon Community College. They're reporting that 20 people were injured. This is a very different shooting, school shooting, in the sense that I cannot remember any shooting where virtually no information was being provided. And it was, even the news anchors were commenting on how unusual it was that no information was being given. Even the press conferences, they would not take any questions. They were very, almost cryptic with their answers. And nobody was telling anybody anything as of early this afternoon. Then finally, about 3 p.m. Hawaii time, I went on Twitter and learned that CBS News had reported that the name of the perpetrator was 27-year-old Chris Harper Mercer. I want to show you a photo that I got off of Twitter. This is him, and you can see that he is holding a gun. Now, about 4 p.m. Hawaii time, I found this New York Post report with the headline, Oregon Gunman Singled Out Christians During Rampage. I'm going to quote the article, and then I want to comment on this just a little bit here. The shooter was lining people up and asking if they were Christians. And apparently this was a text message that was sent from one student there on the campus to the other. And they were trying to, you know, apprise everybody of what was going on with this active shooter. So apparently the shooter, and this is confirmed by multiple news agencies, here's what this, I'm going to again just quote the article. The shooter was lining people up and asking if they were Christians, she wrote. If they said yes, then they were shot in the head. If they said no or didn't answer, they were shot in the legs. My grandma just got to my house and she was in the room. She wasn't shot, but she is very upset. A lot of information is being posted on social media. I found this tweet on Twitter. Not surprised, but you have to understand that I just put this together just this afternoon prior to coming tonight. And usually I like to spend a considerable amount of time vetting everything that I'm reading so that I'm not, you know, putting out false information. But the only reason I mention this is that I believe the reason why information was sparse at best and intentionally and deliberately withheld at worst is because this is a Muslim who has gone into a school, a community college in Oregon, of all places, and by the way, by design, because of Oregon's gun laws. I'll talk about that in a moment. And he has singled out the Christians according to the Quran, because the Muslim in the Quran is commanded to strike terror in the hearts of the infidel, the people of the book, the Jews and the Christians, and to kill them wherever you find them, and to smite ye them above their necks, to behead them, basically. And so it may turn out that this is not the case, but I got to tell you, I would be absolutely shocked if it isn't. I mean, this is, has all of the markings of yet another Islamic terrorist attack in the state of Oregon, of all states. Now, I suppose we shouldn't be surprised that within just a matter of hours after the shooting, Obama would angrily scold Americans concerning gun control, and in so doing, all but threaten to change the Second Amendment. I learned a little bit today as I started researching this and reading about this, and newscast pointed out because in this stunning speech, and it was just stunning and disconcerting. It was as disconcerting as it was stunning because he said this before any information had been released. The name of the shooter had not been released. And here's what's really interesting, and this has led some to speculate that there is in play a conspiracy. And I'm not as quick as I used to be dismissive of the conspiratory, you know, suggestions. But what we did find out almost immediately was what kind of weapons he had. The number of guns, the type of, I don't know anything about guns. Maybe that's a good thing, that as an Arab, I don't know anything about weapons. But anyway, the type of guns, the number of guns. And it was, the comment was made that this is unprecedented that you would have that information released and have that be the only information that's released that close in proximity to the crime. It makes no sense. They should not be, quote, transparent, end quote, as one said it, when it comes to that forensic evidence. So, again, you kind of wonder, and the only reason I would even mention that there may be that I think we would be remiss to dismiss that kind of a conspiracy is because it eclipsed almost at the same exact time the most powerful and profound speech that was ever delivered to the United Nations General Assembly in the history of the UN. How many of you watched this one? Keep your hands up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Boy, you guys, I can't even begin to tell you how important it is that you go online and just search Netanyahu UN General Assembly speech. You need to watch this. In fact, if I had more time today, I would have tried to get the video to at least show you this speech in part. Right after Netanyahu's speech, this news broke about what happened in Oregon. And it was almost like, in fact, I read one tweet on Twitter, said, how do we get everybody's attention away from what Netanyahu said at the UN, and how do we get everybody's attention away from what Russia and Iran are doing in Syria? Oh, I know! Let's have a false flag mass shooting in Oregon. Now, I'm not in any way suggesting that that's what it is, but when the timing of it is such as it was today, you kind of got to wonder. And that's why I think that we would be remiss to be dismissive of it. Let me quote. There's two things I want to quote from his speech. They're just so, it is so powerful. So powerful. Quoting the Prime Minister. As for the Supreme Leader himself, speaking of the Ayatollah Khamenei, a few days after the nuclear deal was announced, he released his latest book. Here it is. You see it pictured here. He's holding up the Supreme Leader's book. Did you hear about this? It's a 400-page creed detailing his plan to destroy the state of Israel. Last month, Khamenei once again made his genocidal intentions clear before Iran's top clerical body, the Assembly of Experts. He spoke about Israel, home to over 6 million Jews. He pledged, quoting the Supreme Leader, there will be no Israel in 25 years. 70 years after the murder of 6 million Jews, Iran's rulers promise to destroy my country, murder my people. And the response from this body, the response from nearly everyone of the governments represented here has been, and he pauses, absolutely nothing. Utter silence. Deafening silence. I'm going to put a picture of the Prime Minister of what he looked like after he said this. For the next 45 seconds, Netanyahu stared down the assembly with a silence that doubtless was heard around the world. This was early this morning. I was sitting there in my office. I've got, you know, the TV's going. I got all my, you know, screens with my internet, you know, going, and things are lighting up, and I watched it live as he's delivering it. Of course, this is in New York, so it's early in the morning for us. And when he got to this point, he stopped, and he just, look at that look. Stink eye is an understatement, if you ask me. He did this for 45 seconds. You could have heard a pin drop through the TV. And it was the most uncomfortable thing. And they were panning. I couldn't believe they did this. They were actually panning around the assembly. And people were just visibly uncomfortable. It was, as one said, awkward. You know, 45 seconds, a speech. I mean, if I stopped talking for 45 seconds, I know that would be a miracle if I could actually do that. I don't know that I could. But if I could, it would seem like an eternity. And as he's doing it, he's not looking down. Well, he might glance at his notes, but he's looking at everybody in the assembly. You know, because I have, different news stations going on at the same time, it's always kind of humorous to see the comparison of the news tickers on the different, you know, channels, particularly CNN, as opposed to, say, somebody like Fox. And, you know, CNN is just blasting Netanyahu. And you can always, you know, the captions underneath. And I thought to myself, you know, they don't get it. They don't get it. I truly can only reconcile it in my own mind and heart as being that people are deceived and people are blind to the truth. Here's another quote from Benjamin Netanyahu. This one, I think it says it all. Now another regime has arisen, speaking of Iran, swearing to destroy Israel. That regime would be wise to consider this. I stand here today representing Israel, a country 67 years young, but the nation state of people nearly 4,000 years old. Yet the empires of Babylon and Rome are not represented in this Hall of Nations. Neither is the 1,000-year Reich. Those seemingly invincible empires are long gone, but Israel lives. The people of Israel live. And they will. I was aghast with an unspeakable disgust. And I find it utterly shameful that the U.S. delegates, pictured here, refused to applaud Netanyahu's speech. And if this weren't bad enough, notice that conspicuously absent. You see those two chairs in the back? Well, the ones in the front would normally be occupied by the U.S. ambassador to the UN, Samantha Power, absent. How about the Secretary of State, John Kerry, absent? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You know, I take a lot of heat and I get excoriated on social media every time I talk about judgment coming to the United States of America. I get called the most vile of names whenever I say that the United States of America has sealed her fate and it's too late, which would certainly explain the absence of the United States of America from Bible prophecy, wouldn't it? But when I see something like this today, maybe that explains this. You hear about this? This has got a lot of experts freaked out. This just today too. Boy, today was, I wish that they wouldn't pick Thursday. I'm trying to study for, you know, the the Bible study on Thursday nights, but made for a busy day. I had to skip dinner. Don't feel too sorry for me. I need to skip a few dinners. Just today, several states on the East Coast are declaring a state of emergency in anticipation of this Hurricane Joaquin. Not Waheed, Joaquin. As God is my witness, if they ever name a hurricane Waheed, Jesus is coming for sure, I'm telling you. So it's strengthened to a Category 4 storm. And the problem is that, it's kind of humorous, you look at these weather patterns where they're trying to predict what course it's going to take, and it's like this. They don't know, and there's a reason for that. Nobody knows what this thing's going to do. And they don't know how hard it's going to hit. The concern, according to one source, is, quote, Hurricane Joaquin is locked in a dance with an extraordinarily heavy rainstorm that is already drenching the Carolinas. I read just one headline before I left to come tonight, and already there's one death from the floods, and this storm hasn't even hit yet. And what's really unique about this particular storm is that there's this merging with an already heavy rainstorm there as well. And this source goes on to say, as the two draw closer together over the next few days, the effects could be disastrous for the East Coast. All of the governors have gone on TV and announced that they have declared their states a state of emergency. And now everybody is watching to see what's going to happen with this storm. I guess we'll find out. I did read a few articles, and I knew I would. I've actually talked about this before. But there are those who suggest that there's a connection between this storm and what's going on at the United Nations this last week. Chiefly, the raising of the Palestinian flag at the United Nations for the first time. This was yesterday, and it was just moments after Mahmoud Abbas delivered a controversial speech at the UN General Assembly in which he declared basically that the Palestinian Authority was no longer bound by the Oslo Peace Accords with Israel. I can't even begin to tell you how huge this is, by the way. But you know about the Oslo Peace Accords. September of 1993, a peace agreement was made with then-President Clinton on the White House lawn and the Prime Minister of Israel, Yitzhak Rabin, and Yasser Arafat. And that peace agreement was known as the Oslo Peace Accords, was to actually arrive at an agreement between the Jews and the Palestinians. Now, for Abbas to say what he said after having the Palestinian flag raised brings to mind a very significant prophecy, and one that we've talked about over the years, and it's Daniel 9:27. And I'll explain why. I'm going to just read it real quick. He will confirm a covenant. Hang on to that for a second. He will confirm a covenant with many for 1 7, a period of 7. In the middle of the 7, he will put an end to sacrifice and offering. And at the temple, he will set up an abomination that causes desolation until the end that is decreed is poured out on him. Now, stay with me on this. This is very, very important and germane to our understanding of prophetic events and how everything will go down during the 7-year tribulation. This covenant that the Antichrist will confirm carries with it in the original language of the Hebrew Old Testament the idea of enforcing by force. He will force the confirming of a covenant, which implies that there was already a covenant in place. He doesn't make the covenant, he confirms it. He enforces it. In other words, he enforces something that has already been agreed to, but something that has been tossed to the side, which is why he has to confirm it and enforce it. And it will be a 7-year agreement, and it will be the 7-year tribulation. And in the middle of the 7 years, at the 3.5-year mark, the Antichrist is going to commit the abomination that causes desolation. And some believe, and by the way, this will be in the temple, that the Antichrist, I believe, as part of this covenant that he enforces and confirms, that he will let the Jews build their temple. Now, there's a lot of debate about where the temple will be built. Some believe that it will not be where the Dome of the Rock is, that you will not have to disturb the Dome of the Rock. And certainly they make a compelling argument. And that would surely make sense because of the outer courts, which are belong to the Gentiles, which is another prophecy in the book of Revelation. So for those of you who went to Israel with us and were able to go up on the Temple Mount in 2008, you remember that huge area with nothing on it? Some believe that's where the temple will be. And by the way, it lines up with the Eastern Gate, which was sealed shut, because that's the gate when Jesus returns that he will enter through when he puts his foot on the Mount of Olives, where we stood. And it's going to split. And oh my goodness. And by the way, we're going to be there. We're going to have front row seats, because at the rapture, Jesus comes for us. At the second coming, Jesus comes with us, 10,000s by his side. But they will have rebuilt their temple, and then he will demand to be worshipped, and he will commit this abomination, probably the sacrificing of an unclean animal, and it will cause desolation. And by the way, it's believed that at this point, the Jews will realize this is not their Messiah. This is a false Messiah. This is the anti-Messiah. And they will flee Jerusalem, and for the last 3.5 years of the 7-year tribulation, God will protect them in, of all places, Petra, which is in modern-day Jordan. That's a whole nother teaching for another time maybe, but it is very, very fascinating. In fact, one historian and prophecy expert many, many years ago was so convinced that Petra was going to be the place that the Jews fled to during the second half of the 7-year tribulation, he actually put the scriptures that prophesied that in earthen vessels and hid them in Petra. So when the Jews get there, they're going to have those scriptures that foretell that this will happen. I want to, time is going by too fast, but I want to take a little bit of time and talk about the Pope. I mentioned the Pope last week, and I knew I was gonna get it, and I did. We had a YouTube subscriber that blasted me concerning the statement, the quote from the Pope that the cross was a failure. I don't have the quote tonight. I mentioned this on Sunday. And I went back and tried to sort of connect the dots as to why it is that he would say that. I had another comment on YouTube about He was just referring to how, you know, like what Paul talks about to the Corinthians, that the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. And so be a Berean. I like that. So good. Let's search the scriptures on that. That's not what he said. He did not say the cross was foolishness, and this was not a homily to those who are perishing, for whom the cross would be foolishness too. No, he was very clear that the cross was a failure. And so I just said, Lord, I need some help on this. I want to know why. Why? And then the Lord just ministered to me that Catholicism does not see the cross as a success, as the greatest victory of all humankind. And by the way, think about this now. Is this not why every time you see a Catholic crucifix, he's still on the cross? Why is my Jesus still on your cross? Because the cross was a failure. Why do you think it is that Catholics believe in what is known as transubstantiation? What's transubstantiation? Every time they partake of the cup and the bread, they believe that it literally, miraculously, mystically turns into the literal blood and body of Christ. Why? Because they have to continually sacrifice Christ. Every time they partake of communion, they sacrifice Jesus Christ anew. In that same homily, I read the text of the homily. He made a comment in there and it hit me. He said that God has called us to conversion daily. What? What? No. The sacrifice, the writer of Hebrews tells us, makes it very clear in chapter 10, is once and for all. Once and for all. It is finished, period. Not comma, not semicolon, not dash, not dot, dot, dot. It is finished. So get him off the cross, because it's finished. When you get into Revelation, and you read about the church of Thyatira, very interesting. They had good works.